Punjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Bala Girbhare Dhari. Gopi Jana Bala Girbhare Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Balabha Girbhare Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jayam Shivam Sabadaraj Gitaya Stutana Santa Sisi Mud AC Bhakti Vedanta Swami Varashala Prabhupada Ki Jayam Vishnubhavam Sabadaraj Gitaya Stutana Santa Sisi Mud Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Varashala Prabhupada Ki Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Thank you for coming this evening. Tonight we have a very interesting topic of discussion, which you might find applicable to you. And I think by the end of this talk, you'll probably think, how could this not be applicable to any of us? We'll discuss something that is all around us, yet it's a controversy. At the same time, the very basis of life as we know it is affected. In Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, we do not shy away from dealing with the everyday realities. It is simply that the practitioner of bhakti yoga has a different vision. As Lord Krishna explains in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what is night for the transcendentalist is day for the materialist, and vice versa. So the two types of creatures will see everything differently. This is one thing that you'll have to become accustomed to and familiar with if you're going to make actual spiritual advancement in this world. According to who you are, that is how you're going to see the world and yourself. It all depends on your purity of consciousness. You cannot expect persons with different levels of advancement in consciousness to view the world in the same way. Therefore, here in Los Angeles, you have many persons dedicated to materialism, and you've got persons dedicated to pure spiritual development, Krishna consciousness. They will always look at the world differently. That's just the way it is, and indeed, it is the way it should be. You can't just merge everyone's consciousness together and say, well, you may be material, you may be spiritual, but whatever, you know, we're all just one, we're all for all, and we're just living the life. And I remember in Sydney, Australia, I was speaking to some successful young men in finance, and we were having a casual conversation. And their attitude was, oh, so you're into Krishna. Well, that's good. I'm into scuba diving. And he's into skiing. Yeah. He's into Buddhism. You know, he's into racing fast cars. You know, it's all just part of it all, you know. Everyone has to have something that will motivate them. Everyone has to have a belief. It's really good that you believe in Krishna. It's really good he believes in fast cars. And you chant Hare Krishna, he skis. And that's the way the world is, you know? Mm. As devotees of Bhagavad Gita, we're trying to educate people that there is a great difference in consciousness between those who are dedicated to purifying themselves and those who are not. To recognize that difference doesn't mean you're a sectarian. Some of you might even be afraid that if I'm known to be too enthusiastic about bhakti yoga, about Krishna consciousness, then maybe that's bordering on fanaticism, or I'm excluding others. I don't want to be an exclusivist. I want to be inclusive. So maybe in order to be legitimately inclusive, we should view everyone as the same, whether they ski, scuba dive, chant Hare Krishna, whatever your proclivity is, whatever the main expression of your life is, it's all the same. Many advisors, pop psychological counselors, will tell you, it doesn't matter really what you do in life as long as you do it with a passion. If you're doing it with a passion, that's a success. If you're into making money, do it with a passion. If you're into playing sports, do it with a passion. If you're into mantra meditation, do it with a passion. This is the mentality today. Now, our subject matter for tonight, in case you haven't heard, is oil, civilization, and Krishna. Now, you have a natural vested interest in all three of these subjects, oil, civilization, and Krishna. First of all, we live in an oil-based civilization, a civilization that has developed so concentratedly upon the ready supply of cheap oil. These are the basic facts of existence. And this, therefore, everyone's concerned. In the past 5 years, just as gasoline prices are rising, similarly, the number of books being published predicting the apocalypse, the end, the doom, because of the end of the oil supply. These kind of books have multiplied, just as the gasoline prices have multiplied. What is the truth about it? I travel around the world on every continent, and most places I go to, people are in anxiety. How long can we keep up with the rising gasoline prices? Our salaries are not rising as fast as the pump prices are rising. Something's got to give. Now, a point I'm going to make tonight, I'll tell you in advance, is that the real problem is not so much whether there is going to be an oil, whether we're going to run out of oil or not. The real problem is, how dare we produce a kind of society or civilization in which everyone is in anxiety? That is the point. In other words, we are frightened by our own creations. This is the point I want to make. You see, when you consider the potential of your body to cause you problems, your own body, when you consider the potential of the weather to cause you problems, nature to cause you problems, isn't that enough anxiety to deal with in one lifetime? It's like I have this mark on my forehead because I bang my head at night, you know, on something I didn't see. The body is temporary. The body is very easily injured. And then nature produces unpredictable things. Hurricane Katrina, earthquakes. Isn't that enough to deal with? Enough anxiety about the unexpected? But then our civilization adds to that anxiety. More anxiety based on things we create, things that we add to this world. We're frightened by our own creations. So now you have an oil-based civilization. More specifically, a civilization based on cheap oil. So many conveniences, apparently. Apparent conveniences. They're coming from oil. Now, before we go further, I want to read you a verse from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 16. Lord Krishna is speaking. Chintam aparimeyam cha palayantam upasritaha kamopabhoga parama etavat iti nishtita asha pasha shatar bhadha kama krodha parayana ihante kama bhogatam anyani natta sanchayan. What does Bhagavan Sri Krishna say? They believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of their life, their anxiety is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires, and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. A very incisive characterization of the current version of human civilization. The belief that to please our senses, in ordinary parlance, to be happy in whatever way you feel. This is the prime necessity of life. Now, some people would argue, well, it's not exactly just that, but also you'd like to make the senses of others who are dear to you happy also. It's not all for you. You'd like your bodily relations to be gratified. You'd like your family members and friends. You'd like them to be happy also. And forget the rest of the people. I mean, it'd be nice if the rest of the people in the world were happy too, but, you know, it's the way it is in this world. Right? At least your friends and your own family should be happy. That's the main thing. And if the good Lord wants the other people across the sea to be happy, let it be. So think about this, because it's kind of easy to dodge this reality. Who, me, believe that gratifying the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization? But when you think about it, yes. Yeah, that's actually what my life is about. That's actually what my career is about. I want me to be happy. And when I think about me, and when I talk about me, I'm talking about my mind and senses. And in my most charitable moments, I'm talking about the mind and senses of those who are near and dear to me, mainly. So yes, it is true. I believe that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization. I was speaking in Santa Barbara two nights ago, and I was telling the people who came that as I travel around the world, I've seen more than a few times in airline magazines, in newspapers, proclamations of the new Mumbai. And each time the article warns, are you one of those who thinks that Mumbai, a former Bombay, is some antiquated colonial city in India? You obviously are not in tune with what's really happening. The old Bombay, now Mumbai, is one of the world's greatest party cities. A place where the big money is and the beautiful people. In fact, the British Airways magazine called Mumbai the molten epicenter of Asian hedonism. Very powerful graphic description, you know, molten epicenter. You know, there's a volcano, and deep down in the earth, under the volcano, you know, there's the lava, the hot lava gathers. That's the molten epicenter. And then the lava shoots through the volcano out the top, and so now Mumbai is considered that molten epicenter of Asian hedonism. And this is considered to be a great compliment. 20 years ago, if someone would call you a hedonist, you'd be offended. It's not like that anymore. Now you, oh, thank you so much. What an honor. I'm recognized as being a hedonist. So the same thing is happening in terms of the accolades for Mumbai, the molten epicenter of Asian hedonism. This was like the supreme compliment being bestowed upon the city. In other words, people aren't being, they're not shy anymore about their brazen desires. They're stripping away all their religious veneer and just revealing, we're simply dedicated to me and mine. We'll do a little charity, of course, but the main thing is our senses have to be satisfied. What else does Krishna say? Because they have this belief that to gratify the senses is the prime necessity of human civilization, thus, until the end of life, their anxiety is immeasurable. So this is our point. As we go deeper into this discussion about oil and civilization and Krishna, please remember that as devotees of Krishna, we protest the type of so-called civilization that simply heightens anxiety in the name of convenience, in the name of gadgets and gizmos and technological advancement. Many of you know that right now the second biggest disease in the world, behind heart disease, is depression. And everyone knows about the stress reality. The stress levels have gone up so high. In fact, in the USA, since 1950, the levels of teenage depression have gone up by 300%. So we're challenging, what kind of civilization is this? That in the name of convenience, in the name of the information age, is simply increasing anxiety. As Krishna says here, thus until the end of their life, their anxiety is immeasurable. Bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Now you might say, well, that sounds familiar. We can admit that we're bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires. Yes, we can admit we're absorbed in lust and anger. But secure money by illegal means? No, we don't do that. But what does Krishna mean here by illegal means? That means methods that are unnatural, that are a disturbance to other people, disturbance to nature. That is true illegality. Not just because you're violating laws that are recorded in some city law book or nation law book, but you're disturbing nature, you're disturbing peaceful living. You're destroying people's possibilities for focusing on their spiritual responsibilities with a clear mind. So anytime you do that, anytime you push on economic development in that way, that is an illegal method for securing money. you are increasing the stock of anxiety in the world. Therefore, it's considered illegal. Now, let us discuss the oil factor. For many years now, prophets, economic prophets, have been warning the oil's going to run out. The fact is, as I discovered when studying an MIT presentation of the problem, is that everyone agrees, yes, the oil will run out. You see, I was afraid. I didn't want to waste my time dealing with, like, tabloid doomsday predictors and exaggerated analyses. So I figured, let me turn to MIT. Let me see what their top scientists are saying. And I found out, everyone agrees, the oil will run out. The only disagreement is when. Some say the oil production will peak in the next 10 years, and it will be downhill. Others say the oil production will peak in 30 years, and then it's downhill. So that's the big fight. 10 years or 30 years before things peak and rapidly go downhill. So if you're amongst those who say, well, it'll happen in 30 years, the peak point will be hit then you can kind of breathe easier. Well, it's 30 years from now, who cares what happens? Most of us here will, you know, will be old and retired, or even not even present in this world anymore. It's a problem that our children will have to deal with, and they're Americans. They'll figure something out. So, what struck me is, once again, this universal agreement. It is a problem. It will run out. And then here's where religion comes. There is a kind of religious belief. I call it religious purposely. That, look, some or other will muddle through all this. Some or other it'll work out. Some or other new forms of energy will arise. Alternative forms of energy. It's got to happen, of course. Why? Because, I mean, you know, progress, you know. Do you really believe for a moment that the scientists will let us be without a mass and cheap supply of energy? Nah, can't happen. They've got to come up with something. It's just the way it is, you know. Progress, you know. Just like 5 years ago, there were no iPods. Now there are iPods everywhere. And what? Nanopods. So similarly, got an oil problem? They'll come up with something. We don't know what it is, but we're sure. That's just the way the world works. Are we really that sure, however? So, this MIT review was considering the possibility that there'll never be an alternative energy source that will meet our needs as cheaply and conveniently as oil. In other words, we're heading into uncharted territory, which will lead to an economic and political mess that no one's ever seen before. Now, this might seem extreme, but please remember, I'm giving you information, you know, from your top scientists at MIT. They say this is a possibility, although a possibility that naturally one does not feel comfortable about accepting. There must be some hope. The most pessimistic view says that oil is a one-shot deal. There'll never be anything like it to replace it. And when all the oil dries up, civilization as you know it comes grinding to a halt. Let's briefly talk about how oil affects every aspect of our society. In this way, we can reflect upon Krishna's statement in Bhagavad Gita about societies that go out of their way to produce anxiety. That is the number one import and export of a successful nation these days, anxiety. We're proposing a completely different way of analyzing society. Not just the GNP, but the levels of anxiety. In other words, as a human being, we have a right to live a peaceful and clear, simple life, accepting the need for spiritual enlightenment as our most important priority. Now, when society destroys that clarity, that simplicity, that peacefulness, then this is the greatest injury to human potential. So, even when you eat, you're dealing with oil. You don't eat oil directly, but the fertilizers that allow mass production of food, that's all oil-based, as you know. It's oil that brings the food to your door. Plastics all come from oil. Even you talk about solar energy, the solar energy cells are made of plastic. It all comes from oil. So therefore, some scientists are questioning, will we ever come up with something so effective, so cheap and portable as oil to power society? In other words, our whole civilization has grown up around oil. What happens if we never find a source of energy to replace oil? Or should we just believe somehow or other something will happen? So, some of these scientists are saying it won't happen. There'll never be anything as effective. Solar energy, that's just not enough to run society as it is now. Wind energy, hydroelectric, nuclear energy, biomass energy, these are all supplementary forms of energy production. So, if indeed it is so that no replacement for oil as a mass energy supply, if it's true that such a replacement never comes, that means society as it is now cannot go on. It's not a matter of simply what powers your car. It's also the roads that you drive on. Most of them are topped with oil-based products. Everything is plastic. That comes from oil. It's actually quite shocking to think, what if, when the oil runs out, which everyone agrees it will, what if there's no replacement? So some of the top scientists are thinking like that. It's a scary thought. One sociologist was even saying, the USA as we know it will no longer exist. It'll break into autonomous regions because people can't be connected anymore through transport. For example, if you're living in Santa Barbara, it'll take you a few days to get to L.A. If you're living in a suburb of Santa Barbara, let's say Carpinteria, it'll take you all day just to get into the city of Santa Barbara to do some shopping. It's a whole day's mission. And there's no question of you ever getting to New York. Think about it. Could this kind of world come about? So the real battle now is get those alternative energy forms going. Those alternative energy sources, get them going. There's got to be something. We've got to muddle through somehow. We've got to come up with something. It's like a religious belief that it'll happen. We'll find something. We always do. Necessity is the mother of invention. That's what powers this great country, necessity. And our backs are against the wall, you know. The Yanks can do it all. You'd be surprised that this kind of optimism is unique. You go to other parts of the world, which I do regularly, they don't have his optimism. They all say, this is uniquely American, this view that it'll all work out somehow. You go to Russia, you go to parts of Asia, even Europe, even Western Europe is much more conservative and pessimistic because they had World War II there, they had World War I there. Until 9/11, there was never any heavy damage to the USA in recent memory, maybe since the Civil War or something like that. So in Western Europe, people know that, hey, just 60 years ago, you wouldn't have wanted to be anywhere near Western Europe. So they still remember in the back of their consciousness. So my point is that this unique optimism is very special. People can readily pick out American tourists overseas, not just by their loud voice or their Bermuda shorts, but they can pick them out by this kind of bubbly, cheery optimism. It's all going to work out. Everything's going to be fine. People can immediately recognize Americans because of that. So, what about, then, this optimistic belief that even though the oil's running out, the scientists all agree it's going to run out, something will happen. We know they're hiding something. Just like Apple waited for so long to release the new Macs with the Intel chip. Similarly, the scientists must be hiding away some alternative energy form, just waiting for the right moment to spring it on us and save the day and make a lot of money, too. We don't mind they're making a lot of money as long as they save the day, right? So we have this kind of naive faith that there's something in the offing, something waiting in the wings. But some scientists are saying, maybe there's not. Maybe the alternative forms of energy won't be able to save the day. And society as we know it will come to an end in terms of transportation, in terms of every aspect of life as we know it. No plastics anymore. No long journeys. So these things are being discussed at our top institutions in the USA. It's not just doomsday talk anymore. Now, whether you accept that such a scenario could happen or not is actually not the main point of my presentation. Who knows? Something may come up. But also, maybe something doesn't come up that will replace oil. My point is, why should human beings make a society in which they're scared by their own inventions? That is the point. And this is what Krishna is referring to in Bhagavad Gita. Why have a society in which everyone is so full of anxiety, so on the edge all the time? That is not the way human civilization should be. So whether new sources of energy emerge or don't, people are in anxiety now, and that is what the Krishna conscious person addresses. We have enough anxiety in this world because of bodily problems, mental problems, natural problems. Why add on to it? Why should technology add to anxiety? That is the point. Now you might say, what's the big deal of having anxiety? It's all part of life. But the Vedic texts take anxiety very seriously because as long as people are absorbed in anxiety, they cannot properly focus on the goal of human life, which is to become spiritually enlightened. Therefore, a leader's first task is to clean up the sources of anxiety that are troubling the people. That is the first task. So whether the oil is irreplaceable by another energy form or not, that is not the main point of my presentation. The main point of my presentation is we shouldn't sponsor, or we shouldn't favor the type of civilization that mass produces anxiety. We should look for a more elevated way to live. A more elevated way to live means freedom from anxiety, unnecessary anxiety. Let's deal with the legitimate anxieties that we have. We don't need to add on to that. So on the one hand, it seems very convenient to live in an oil-based society. But on the other hand, just look at all the anxiety. Rising gasoline prices, fears, what will it be like when the oil peaks and then runs out? Will life as we know it go on? Then here you have MIT scholars seriously considering the possibility. But then even they at the end say, well, probably something will come up. I mean, human beings are very flexible and creative. We don't know. So therefore their conclusion is, probably you might laugh at all these doomsday predictors, but it should be a nervous laugh. Now, a Krishna conscious person is concerned for his or her own state of mind as well as the state of mind of the world. As long as there is such an intense level of anxiety, people will not be able to focus on the ultimate goal of life. So therefore, we want to call people's attention to the type of society in which human beings are not frightened by their own creations, their own inventions. That's actually not advancement at all when such a situation happens. People are filled with anxiety based on things they've created. There's enough in nature already to put you in anxiety. Basically, to be a successful bhakti yogi, you have to be willing to modify your lifestyle so that you rid yourselves of all unnecessary sources of anxiety. That is every practitioner of Krishna consciousness. That is your responsibility. Because as long as there's unnecessary anxiety in your life, you won't be peaceful, you won't be clear, you won't be balanced. Well, this is why Krishna makes these statements. As a Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna understands what are the proper facilities for people to become Krishna conscious. What is the proper setup, environment for people in which people can become Krishna conscious? You see, in this way, Bhagavad Gita is a very practical book. It's not that Krishna is talking about anxiety just to shake you up and turn you into a religious fanatic. Now, Krishna understands that as long as you act in such a way as to fill yourself with anxiety, you'll never be able to focus on the ultimate goal of life. Therefore, he's saying like this in this verse in the 16th chapter of the Gita. They believe that to gratify the senses is a prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, until the end of their life, their anxiety is immeasurable, bound by a network of hundreds of thousands of desires, and absorbed in lust and anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Well, here, let's hear a little bit from Srila Prabhupada's purport. He writes, the demoniac accept that the enjoyment of the senses is the ultimate goal of life, and this concept they maintain until death. They do not believe in life after death, and they do not believe that one takes on different types of bodies according to one's karma or activities in this world. Their plans for life are never finished, and they go on preparing plan after plan, all of which are never finished. Stark, but very insightful. Now, we should be thinking, not that, well, I know a lot of people who this applies to, yeah. Of course, I'm not that bad. I may have a few drops of this in my life, but the problem is those other people. Those materialists out there, they are the problem. But we have to genuinely look at ourselves in the mirror and see how much of our lifestyle is based on religious belief and how much is actually based on applying Krishna's instructions. Bhagavad Gita is not a believer's book. Bhagavad Gita is a manual, a handbook for purification and reconnection with the Supreme Lord. Krishna doesn't ask for belief in Bhagavad Gita. He asks for application of the spiritual technology. So let us think about that. As we're driving up to the gas pumps and you see the prices going up, don't just think, oh, how long is this going to go on and what's really going on with the world's oil supply? Just think, is all this anxiety necessary? I'm paying a big price for convenience, and that price is anxiety. So, as a Krishna conscious practitioner, this is what I see as the real problem. Whether the doomsdayers are right or not, the real problem is we have very brilliantly created a civilization that saturates us with anxiety. And that shouldn't be. We should value so highly our precious clarity and peace of mind. We shouldn't sacrifice that for anything. Therefore, Krishna speaks as he does in Bhagavad Gita. All right, do we have any questions? Yes. You have to change your lifestyle. Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, is about lifestyle management. This is the cutting edge career for the future. We need lifestyle management counselors who can actually help people to simplify their life. And that's a great skill. That's a great art. We have to create for ourselves and as many people as possible opportunity to live a simple life and to appreciate the beauty of a simple life. The beauty is less anxiety, more clarity for focusing on the ultimate goal of life. You can have great fun going through your whole life and simplifying it. Try it sometime. I'm sure some of you have. You go through your whole house, your whole apartment. Do I really need this? Do I really need that? Why am I buying this? Why am I adding this to my life? What is it really going to do for me? What am I expecting from it? Will indeed I become happy? Accumulating consumer goods, accumulating relationships, juggling this, juggling that. What's it all for? What if I just stop? But you can't just stop. You have to accumulate something. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna recommends that you accumulate him. Krishna is the supreme consumer item. He produces absolutely no anxiety. Anything else? Yes. Ah. My dear God, brother. Shringananda. Hare Krishna.
All right. So Prabhupada said simple living, high thinking. But it seems that it's come to high thinking, high living. That's what it's come to.
And now everyone's in anxiety. What's the truth about the oil situation? Is the doomsday talk for real? Is it just scaring us? There's got to be a solution somewhere. The scientists will save us somehow. After all, I mean, this is modern times. These are not the dark ages. That's why I'm just giving you a brief synopsis of this MIT study in which scientists are seriously starting to consider, suppose it all doesn't work out. And maybe our belief that it will all work out is just religious. There'll be something. It'll be solar energy. It'll be wind energy. It'll be biomass. Something. It'll happen. Some scientists are actually starting to say, maybe this is just some kind of religious belief. Maybe there'll never be such an energy source as oil again. Interesting thinking exercise. But once again, let me explain. Our message tonight is not whether there will be oil or not. Our message is there's anxiety that shouldn't be there. Otherwise, when there's anxiety, that anxiety is too high, it's very difficult to become Krishna conscious. For that reason, people should change their lifestyle. And as Krishna conscious practitioners, we have to be able to help people to change their lifestyle. We have to teach them the art of lifestyle management. Do you remember? Maybe some of you back in the 50s, I'm sure Nisringananda Prabhu remembers, the dream that the 40-hour work week will be shrinking. We'll have so much leisure time, we won't know what to do, and we'll have to go to leisure time counselors who can help us cope with our plenitude of leisure time. In the 50s, maybe some of you remember, the capitalist countries were promising, this is the future, more leisure time than you'll ever be able to deal with. And the communist countries are also offering the same thing. Through communism, more leisure time. What's the reality now? No one has it. Whether they follow this ism or that ism, no one has leisure time. People are working longer hours than ever before. The statistics, for example, show that the average American works at least 3 more full weeks per year than the Western European. So, where's the leisure time? It's all a dream. It's gone. Now everyone's worried. Stress management. What to do? How to manage my stress? So we protest this kind of civilization. And we're prepared to show a different way of living. Anyone who seriously chants Hare Krishna knows that simplifies your life so much. If you seriously take to the mantra meditation of the holy name of Krishna, automatically your life becomes streamlined. Very simple. That's one way you can begin. Those who take to the meditation on the Maha Mantra, you feel the dirt from your consciousness becoming cleansed, and therefore you realize, I don't need all the things I thought I needed. This is the easy way to simplify your life. This is the easy way to simplify your life. Anything else? All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Krishna, Krishna.